Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here it is Thursday. It's Maundy Thursday. It's Holy Week. It's Last Supper. I will be seeing no other land tonight, only one show in D.C. But tomorrow is Good Friday. That has a lot of resonance for Alaska and for our guest. We'll bring that in a moment. Saturday, it's Crip Day, right? National Rousing Dedication to Democracy. And April 19th, 1775 was the Battle of Lexington and Concord. Then we have Easter Sunday. May all the Kilmars arise safe and free, sending, wafting protection, safety, and sane, reverent common sense. I love what Pope Francis said, somebody recovering from pneumonia, but visiting prisoners, right? Somebody said, how are you doing? And he said, I'm living it as I can. We go, we're with you. So today, land back, ocean back, people back campaign. We welcome the return of Dune Lankert on Good Friday Eve, the anniversary of the Exxon Valdez disaster. It was Good Friday, March 24th, 1989. Now partnering with kelp and everything else, ocean regenerative farming, reverent ingenuity to protect and ally with our flora, fauna, fungi community emerging from cataclysm. Time magazine named Dune one of the top 50 heroes for the planet. Born in 1959 when we were still a territory, and then you say, in 1964, the Good Friday earthquake rocked our world, rocked our fishery, and turned everything upside down. And then 25 years later to the day, on Good Friday in 1989, we had the Exxon Valdez oil spill in our backyard. And now, 36 years later, we're dealing with climate change and more that we will honor and address. Welcome, Dune.
Thank you. It's always good to hear your voice, my dear.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. You serious people. I'm just looking at your chart and Harriet Tubman, just for the sense of it, going, serious people who got stuff done. I did just want to briefly honor your chart that also is always humming, but really came alive on Good Friday 1989. I love the image for your Saturn, which is a party of campers packing their canoe at twilight, the ability to navigate dark water. And it forms a Thor's hammer to your moon, exalted in Taurus overhead, being a voice, a creative voice for the Earth, and your Mars in Leo. And just for the fun of it, I don't know if you knew you had this in your magic backpack. Thor's hammer is the capacity to whoosh and swirl corruption out of the halls of governance. There you go.
I love it. You know, when that oil spill happened, I always refer to that moment in time as the day the ocean died in our region. And yet something inside of me came to life. And I was being prepared for that day since I was 10. Because my mother, Rosie, she said, you're the one. And I said, the one what, Mama? And she said, you're going to have to take on the powers that be. And you're going to have to help save our language and our people and our fishery and our way of life. And so her and grandma decided that they would teach me about the seasons of animals, the seasons of salmon, the seasons of berries, and, you know, just what was in store. And so when that oil spill happened, I knew that it was then my turn to step up and rise up.
Yes, and didn't you, I mean, correct my memory of you and David Grimes telling the story, but didn't you ingeniously then take some of the Exxon Valdez settlement and protect the Copper River Delta?
Yes, what happened when the spill went down, there was a lot of people that and entities that had their hands out. Everyone wanted to become spillionaires. And so the native corporations decided to clear-cut 1 million acres in the parallel path of the Exxon Valdez. And so I sat down with my family and friends, and I said, you know, we're going to end up like California, Oregon, and Washington, and parts of Canada, because in the off season, the fishermen decided to log those forests. And so as the trees fell, two industries were wiped out. And, you know, and I didn't want to see that happen on my watch here in Alaska. And I knew that we couldn't survive from having the nation's worst oil spill at the time and then clear cut the very parallel path, which was all wild salmon habitat. So we decided to use as much as that 900 million out of court settlement from Exxon to go towards conservation agreements to leave the trees standing, therefore protecting our commercial fishing and wild subsistence way of life.
Yes. And now I am reminded in perusing everything about you, going, oh, there we go, we've known each other for a long time, but not really. There's so much more that you talk about Bren Smith. And I go, right, you introduced me to Bren Smith, and we did a whole show on Green Wave in Connecticut and regenerative farming and kelp. And you said that 60 Minutes did a show on Bren. And then also the kelp brick that you describe, which is kelp with berries and hooligan. What's hooligan?
Hooligan is a smelt like fish. And the Eaks were famous for extracting the oil out of the smelt or the hooligan because they're like torpedoes of energy. They're just rich in oil. And so then the EX would cold press that oil, and then you'd be able to use it in lanterns and making fires and cooking. And so we were barterers on the Copper River Delta, 300 miles along the coast from here to Yakutat, and 300 miles up the Copper River, clear up to around Glen Allen. And so we would always have this hooligan oil with us, and it made for good trading and good bartering.
It's a great word, because it usually means, you know, creative heretic rascal, but that's wonderful. But when I was rereading about the kelp brick, which is kelp and berries and hooligan, and how useful it is, you call it the first energy bar, but I began to salivate, going, oh, I want that. Oh, the endogenous cells within us go, oh, kelp, iodine, seaweed, fish, berries. Oh yeah, that's great. So do you have those on hand? Does your wonderful sister make such things?
You know, she doesn't yet. We did experiment with recreating those kelp cakes. And, you know, and we've been adding, you know, some extras, like doing some smoked salmon bits. And the last couple of years, we did some spotted shrimp bits in the kelp cakes. And then we've been experimenting with just, you know, how do we, you know, now figure out how to remake these energy bars. And so we're working with a company, Daybreak Seaweed, to come up with some new products and recipes. And, you know, and I remember when we had that show with Bren Smith and Green Wave, what had happened right prior to that was in 2017, we only harvested 45,000 sockeye salmon, red salmon, on the Copper River Delta, where we would normally harvest 1 to 2 million sockeyes a year. And then in 2018, we only harvested 90,000 reds. And then by 2019, the ocean heated up to 76 degrees for 3 weeks down to 20 feet below the surface and 40 feet at low water. And that was the time again that I sat down with my family and friends and said, this is not how it ends. This is how it begins. We need to look at the ocean differently and start figuring out how to grow food and, you know, different products from the ocean. And so in working with Green Wave and a number of other kelpers, we decided to get into ocean farming in our region. And now we're working with 32 tribes across the state. And in 14 active tribes that are, you know, getting kelp farms in the water. So we're excited.
No, that's so wonderful. And then just quoting you back to yourself, you say, help, kelp. Kelp is the hemp of the sea, It's this miracle microorganism that can grow 18 to 24 inches a day. So it's the bamboo of the sea, right? Making it the fastest growing organism on the planet. Okay, more than bamboo. Kelp has 14 or more vitamins that they know of. It has 10 times more calcium than milk. It has iodine that can help a lot of people with throat issues, omegas and nutrients that provide energy. Once it's processed, you can turn it into 150 to 200 different types of food products. Yes, I want some. If you put 2% kelp into animal feed, yes, I want to do that, and feed it to cows and pigs and dogs, you can reduce their emissions by 50 to 60%. You can create pharmaceuticals, nutraceuticals, biofuels, bioplastics, fertilizers, compost, the list goes on. Yeah, we just need, we just need you and Reverend Ingenuity and people knowing about this, right?
Yeah, you know, it's really amazing. Like, just in the last year, we've had a number of kelp markets finally approach us and want to buy some volume. And last year, after 4 years, we had a couple of kelp companies ready to sign contracts, and we're in this stage of actually, you know, getting the kelp out of the water and signing these contracts. And both the companies, unfortunately, decided to take the season off. And so it's been hard for farmers and even the markets, because we're in this like catch 22 area where, you know, kelpers are afraid to grow volume without the markets in place that are willing to buy. And then the markets, you know, they're sitting back wanting to see us grow volume before they commit to buy. And so, you know, someone's got to move. And so we have been talking with numerous markets over the last 2-3 years, sending them numerous samples, you know, trying to get them to see if they would buy any volume. And so we have 500,000 to 600,000 pound commitments for 2026. And so in this last year, we just decided to focus on doing our test farms one more year. Probably we'll do the next year as well, but we'll get probably anywhere from 5 to 12 kelp farms growing some volume so we can meet some of these markets for ribbon, sugar, and bull kelp.
Yes. And let me remind you of another skill that you have in your magic backpack. I will say it and translate it. The moon in Taurus, you are sun in Cancer, incarnational agent of Big Mama. Where is she? She's overhead when you were born. Exalted in Taurus at a degree of divination, everything speaking to us, all the plants. And your moon quintiles Mercury and Leo to make things visible. It's irresistible eloquence, Dunleinkert, on behalf of what you love, and it's a capacity to illuminate, as you're doing now, and talking to everybody, and we'll tease it into all of your endeavors, so that you don't even have to convince them. They go, oh, now that you pointed my head that way, I see that now. And my friend Sylvia always says the quintile is that, but it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds. So the kelp itself is up for this, and the land and the many, you know, just indefatigable projects. That's right. You said you just got back to Alaska last night, and everybody was like, he's back, constellating family wherever you go, right? That's great. So, you?
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, it's interesting, you know, because we're starting a new ocean industry in an alien ocean, you know, situation. And, you know, as fisheries are diminishing around the planet, the one thing that is for certain is the ocean can take care of itself if we'll quit polluting it. And, you know, and I feel like, you know, kelp is one of those resources, those natural resources that creates habitat for literally hundreds of juvenile species of different seafoods, as well as creating all of these different products that can actually lead to the sequestration of carbon. And so I feel like, you know, now that I'm out on the sea. I still do my commercial fishing on the Copper River Delta, not as much as I would like, but I'm spending more time being a kelper. And kelp was always a nuisance in my life. It was in the way of me and my fish, and it was slippery when it got on deck, and you had to be careful. But I always would take bites of the kelp as a young pup fishing. When we would bring the different species aboard, I would love the smell of it, and I would eat, you know, the different species and see what I liked. And then my first income from the sea was when I was 11, and we would grapple using hooks in long lines to at low water or high water slack. We would throw our hooks down and try and pull some seaweed that had herring roe, where the herring would spawn on the kelp. We'd pull the herring roe on the kelp to the surface, and the Japanese would pay us, you know, upwards of $4 or $5 a pound. And I made my first money from the sea harvesting kelp. And so then when the Exxon Valdez Oilspill happened, my job was to put my net and round haul different species of kelp or whatever was floating in the water that had oil on it. And we put it in these totes and blast it with hot water and chemicals and oil and correct it and dump it back in the water so it looked like the oil spill wasn't that big or damaging. And then when the fishery started crashing, now I find myself being a kelp farmer and also looking at mariculture, which is bivalves, right? Oysters, scallops, mussels, clams, abalone, sea cucumbers. And so we want to, you know, grow a number of these different species in the ocean in different villages that are witnessing upwards of 85% unemployment. And so what we're hoping is that by creating these good paying citizen science jobs to help monitor and get kelp farms in the water and mariculture farms, that it'll bring the people back to the communities and bring regenerative and restorative economies to their homelands.
Yeah, I was looking through the Ashoka pages too, and it said Dune Lankard is turning, this was even decades ago, Dune Lankard is turning conservation into an economic and political opportunity for the indigenous people of Alaska. Right, that's what we want to hum everywhere. Your projects, it's like you do things and your allies like Bren do things and many teammates you want to bring into play. So you do things. And that's a great story. And then people hear that and are inspired by that story and do things, which then becomes a story, right? So that's part of your living strategy, perhaps, yes?
Yes. You know, like when I grew up, you know, I always chased wild salmon because that's all we had. And, you know, and sometimes the numbers would be lower from one year to the next or higher. But we never saw like over 15, 20 million fish harvest in the Prince William Sound region, or certainly the Delta, you know, 1 to 2 million sockeyes and maybe 50,000 kings. Well, those numbers are down. And so what happened was they built 5 of the largest hatcheries in the world in Prince William Sound so they could harvest more salmon. And it literally costs hundreds of millions of dollars to play God to, you know, release that many salmon so you get a higher return. But what I saw as I was growing up was there was a lot of waste where, you know, the fish would come back and they would get dark and we couldn't fish them or you know, different areas where the salmon would come back to weren't traditional spawning streams. And so, you know, they didn't know what to do when they got back to the area that they were released in these remote release areas. So there was a lot of dead salmon on the bottom of the sea. And so right out of high school, you know, I was trying to, okay, how can we turn this waste into gold? And how can we turn fish waste into usable byproducts? And even to this day, I don't feel that the effort has been there to really utilize that waste and turn it into something that's good for the planet. And we're talking millions and millions of pounds. So I'm still hopeful that, you know, folks are going to wise up and figure out how to utilize 100% of everything that we create. And, you know, and even like the oil that's left in the ground and different fossil fuel resources, that we figure out how to use the resource and make it into usable byproducts that can be used for a long, long time, not just burned as gasoline, idling energy in traffic jams and rush hour and even on the sea. And so, you know, part of the work that we're doing now is looking at electric motors for boats. And I started a GEA boat company to try and figure out how we can come up with a solution that is regenerative for this mariculture industry. Because unlike fishing on the Copper River, where you need a lot of HP, a lot of horsepower when it blows 70 mile an hour winds in 20, 30 foot seas, and you're running with fish, you got to be able to get up on top, get up on step, and make it to safety. And so in the mariculture industry, since it's not an industry that you have to feed or water or fertilize the kelp, and you don't have to chase it around, I don't feel that we need the HP that we do in other commercial fisheries. So we want to look at, you know, using, you know, electric motors or hydrogen or even, you know, different types of fuel in different sources of energy capabilities that already exist. And you know, and lessen that horsepower use that we need to go out and get this fishery off the ground. Because like on my 35-foot bow picker that I use for the Copper River, that vessel burns 36 gallons of diesel per hour. How ridiculous is that? But when you're out there in those kind of seas and running from that kind of weather and running with any fish, you appreciate every bit of horsepower that you have, because you know you're going to get home safely, or at least get to the tender and deliver your fish safely. But like in this mariculture industry, I think we have a chance to be more regenerative, and that's our goal.
Yeah, no, and I think we're just putting on the altar of desirable mystery for all of us. Let tyranny serve as incentive. Again, we've been saying this a long time, but now we have more tyranny. If we can compost tyranny, we have an infinite renewable resource. Composting tyranny into incentive and nutrient for, you know, cultural reverent ingenuity, all that you're speaking of, going, let's go, team. So, yeah, and then your own, you know, work in this, but also intimacy from our historic journey down the Copper River, the year that we came off the river, and that's when Katrina hit. But it was a powerful, fabulous journey, right, on rafts, no fossil fuels as we came down. But I do remember your tender conversation with the salmon. One, you caught a salmon, like, hello, salmon, and then killed it, and then we ate it in 2 minutes later. It was like, whew. But you were also telling a story about how, you know, should we use dishwashing liquid? And you're like, yes, we should. I'm not going to get, you know, sick on this trip. And then you said you were scooping up some water and there was a little baby salmon there. And it was like, no, we can't use dishwashing liquid. The salmon has spoken. I don't know. I just, these things that stay with us. I like that. So you continue your participatory animism, right? What wants to happen? Hello, seaweed. Hello, salmon. Hello, humans, right?
Yes. You know, I was brought up, you know, by the last of the EACs. You know, I knew the last full bloods, and, you know, my mother, you know, spurring me on and teaching me the ways of the EACs and how to think differently at 10 years old, you know. And I remember I said, you know, Mama, you cursed me. And she goes, no, I've gifted you. And I said, well, you know, what about my youth? you know, like you're having to learn all this stuff. And she said, well, you know, it's going to be gone soon, so you have to absorb as much as you can. And so I remember there was a next door neighbor. His name was Tom Parker, and he was had a bush plane company here in Cordova, and he was also one of the first fish spotters that would spot herring and salmon and for fishermen, and they'd be able to catch more. And you know, and I remember he was the first $250,000 fish spotter that I knew, and he was a wonderful fella. And one day I was walking down the street, and I was a freshman, and I just got my letterman's coat, and I looked cool, or at least I thought I looked cool with my letters. And you know, and Tom picks me up, and he goes, hey, you got a moment? And I said, yeah. And he brought me down to a sailboat, and he had like this beautiful 50-foot wooden sailboat that was just stunning. And he said, you know, I need a little bit of help with sanding and brass polishing and stuff. And I was like, yeah, okay, you know. And so I'm helping him. And then in the breaks, he would teach me about, you know, how to set a table the right way and where the forks and the spoons and the knives went. And he would teach me about the difference between coffee drinks from mochas and Americanos and black coffee. And then he'd teach me about different milks and half and crackers and hors d'oeuvres. And I said, what are you doing, man? And he said, you grew up with seven little Indians, and I've been over there and watched you guys eat, and it's pretty wild, you know, and everyone's on their own there. And he said, but one day you're going to be a great native leader, and so I need to teach you the ways of having good conversations and good debates, and here's some books you need to read. And you know, and he just took his time with me to learn things that I would never learn at home. And I'm glad to this day that he took that time with me, because it helped me understand how to talk to people and how to communicate and how to have healthy debates. And maybe we have differences of opinion, but there's still common ground, and it's survival, because at the end of the day, we're all indigenous to planet Earth.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're speaking your chart and our mythological endogenous internal heritage, the tradition of mentors. You're speaking of mentors. You know, here, read this book and know this thing, you know, and the earth itself. So he taught you things, and then your mother, grandmother taught you things, and then guided you to the direct source. Am I wrong? Again, it's a grime story. Was Chief Marie chief of the Athabascans?
She was our honorary chief of the Eyak people. Since she was the last full blood of our Eyak people, we honored her. And, you know, and I was fortunate. I got like 5 to 7 years of good work with her over the years. And it kind of led, you know, to me, help and save the Eyak language, because that was one of Mom's things that I had that said I had to do. And I was happened to be driving in with a friend in San Francisco, and on KPFA radio, it came across an announcement from the United Nations that they had declared our Eyak language officially extinct because we lost our last full blood in 2008. And this was 2010, and I got upset and I punched the dash, and this woman said, hey, this isn't your car, you know, like, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not. I said, they just declared our language extinct. And so I decided to go out and raise the money. And, you know, it happened to be, you know, upwards of $1 million to save the language. And so we were able to, you know, get a website and digitize the Eyak English dictionary that Dr. Michael Krauss, the anthropologic linguist, had written used with my grandmother, Ataki Lena Saska, before she passed in the 70s. And so, you know, I just felt like I had the tools. I just had to figure out how to help the people learn them. So now we have 20 key learners that have classes every couple of weeks. And I wish I had the luxury and time just to learn that, our language. But you know, at least we have Eyaks learning their language, which is great.
So and here, according to blessed spirit brother David Grimes, he said, so when Chief Marie, speaker of IAC, was dying concern, as you say, about the language dying out, and according to Grimes, she said, no, the language comes from the land. If you maintain your connection with the land, the language will bubble back up, right? And so that's one. And then you go, yes, and we did all this hard work too. Right, so that's great. So we're going to take a song break now. You probably know this song, Lila June, All Nations Rise. Do you know this song, Dune Linkert?
Oh, no.
Oh, good. Oh boy. Okay, because it's long. It's 4 minutes, but everybody hang in. And Dune and I will be back on the other side to talk about land and many things and blessings from him to him that we will all continue with. But I'm so delighted, because this song is too wonderful to not play the whole thing. So here's Lila June, All Nations Rise, and we'll be right back after this. Here we go.
Indigenous people, shine your light, we are equal. I remember the days when our prayers were illegal. I remember the days when being Indian was lethal. Yeah, we had a rough past, but get ready for the sequel. Get ready for the glorious comeback of our people. Oh yeah, rise up. All you warriors of love, all you answers to the prayers of our ancestors from above. I can feel it in my heart. Can you feel it in your blood? I can hear the seventh fire calling us to wake up, wake all up. All nations rise, rise up, cause now's your time. We don't have to hide anymore, cause now's the time. All nations rise, rise up, cause now's your time. We don't have to hide anymore, cause now's the time. With forgiveness as my bow and my prayers as my arrows, pull them back and let go. I watch them fly like sparrows, have hope. Yeah, have hope. With compassion as my shield and faith down to my marrow, I will walk the pollen path even when it gets narrow. Yeah, yeah, I resurrect. Yes, you can bet that we seen the single mama raising children on the res. We seen domestic violence tear apart what we have left. We seen the alcohol take it all and leave us dead. We seen the children take their lives when they can't take the dread anymore.
It's a war.
Can't take the dread anymore.
It's a war.
No, we can't take the dread anymore.
It's a war.
No, we can't take the dread anymore.
It's a war.
Yeah. It's a war, but we've seen it all before. And now we know we can change it, cause that's why we were born. We know we are the ones that we have been waiting for. We are the ones Grandma has been praying for.
So rise up, all you warriors of love. All you answers to the prayers of our ancestors from above. I can feel it in my heart. Can you feel it in your blood?
I can hear the seventh fire calling us to wake up.
Wake up.
Pueblo hermoso, levántense, es nuestro tiempo. No tienes que esconderte más. Ahora es nuestro tiempo.
Mujer indígena, tú eres tan sagrada. Traigas medicina de tu suelo todavía. A pesar del abuso de tu cuerpo y tu tierra, respetamos tus ancestros y la suya cultura. Hombre indígena, tú eres honorable. Y yo veo la fuerza que todavía sobrevive. A pesar del abuso de tu raza venerable, yo respeto tus ritos, tus danzas, tus padres. Somos guerreros del amor y guerreros de la paz. Sí, no vamos a escondernos más. Somos guerreros del amor y guerreros de la paz. Sí, no vamos a escondernos más.
They say that history is written by the victors, but how can there be a victor when the war isn't over? The battle has only just begun, and Creator is sending his very best warriors. And this time, it isn't Indians versus cowboys, Now, this time, it is all the beautiful races of humanity together on the same side, and we are fighting to replace our fear with love. And this time, bullets, arrows, and cannonballs won't save us. The only weapons that are useful in this battle are the weapons of truth, faith, and compassion.
Wow. That was Lila June, All Nations Rise. It's always powerfully moving. Again, to honor our wonderful guest, ally of decades, ally of many decades to Earth, Dune Lankert, on Good Friday Eve, which is when everything bad in Alaska happened, from which redemption was born, the earthquake, and the Exxon Valdez. So, yeah, but isn't that a good anthem, June?
Oh, my God. That was so wonderful because, you know, it brought me back to when my daughter Ananda was born on May 8th in 2010. And I remember I asked my mother before she passed, I said, when I have a little one, will she know me when she's born? Like, how does that work? And I said, I know she'll know her mama. But what about me? And she goes, she'll know. And then I was wondering, well, will I know? Like, you know, and so the first time I got to hold Ananda, I held her in my arms and I looked at this little precious being, this little Eyak, and I immediately felt and realized that I was no longer going to do my work out of being right or justice or being angry or being upset with what has happened to Indigenous peoples. But I was going to do my work out of love from here on out. And it changed my life. And, you know, and different friends were like, hey, what happened to Warrior Dune? And I said, I'm still here. I'll still be in the battle, but I'm doing it out of love now. And so this song, you know, kind of, you know, helps me see this, because I remember when I first met Winona LaDuke and Ward Churchill at different events, at different book signings, you know, they both wrote something to the effect, see you in the struggle. And I remember turning around to both of them and at different times, and I looked at them, I said, you know, we're going to win this one. And they said, you know, we'll see you in the struggle. Like, you may have some victories, but, you know, the war continues. And that took me a while to realize, because I was a fisherman before the oil spill happened. And then I realized I had to become this social change artist. I had to become this Warrior Dune and take on the powers that be. And I started over a dozen nonprofits because I felt like, you know, not enough was happening fast enough. And if I pushed the envelope legally through direct action, through the media, and just, you know, push the envelope, you know, organizing people that, you know, we could make a difference. And no matter what happened, yes, we'd be in the struggle, but we would be a part of victories and creating change and making things happen that needed to happen that wouldn't happen if we didn't do what we did.
Yeah, rise up, all you warriors of love, right? The weapons this time are truth, faith, and something else important, Lila June said at the end. Yeah, well, and also just even when you speak of Ananda, May 8th, you know, so her sun, S-U-N, is your moon. Where the sun was when she was born is where the moon was when you were born. So, kind. And I love, a friend of mine was worried about his imminent fatherhood, and then he held his little baby and he goes, oh it's you, if I'd known it was you I wouldn't have been worried at all. So I love that kinship and the Taurus glyph, her sun your moon, and Uranus in Taurus now for all of us, nature's ingenuity. We think the little glyph is the bull, but it's not, it's a circle with horns.
Let me just finish.
It's the womb and the fallopian tubes coming into it. So Taurus is all about, why be born? Why bother? Why does creation create? And Taurus says, for pleasure and kinship. So, yes, back to you.
Yeah, so, you know, when I had little Ananda, I saw my mother. She had this old wisdom, and her hair wouldn't grow out for 2.5 years. And so I called her my little Buddha baby. And I'd have to put a little pink ribbon on her head, you know, so people knew that she was a little girl. And I'd bring her to basketball games. And she'd be, you know, hanging on to me, and different friends would see Ananda. And they go, oh, you know, can we hold your little one? And Ananda would just look at me like, don't even think about it, Daddy. Like, she didn't say anything, but she looked at me, don't even hand me over. And, you know, and so I'd go, you know, I can't right now. But it was interesting because Ananda's always been this little wise one. And, you know, and even when she filed her first climate change lawsuit when she was one, and then another one when she was seven, you know, I remember when we were in the courtroom in the Alaska Supreme Court, and they said, honey, just in case that one of the justices call on you, you know, what would you say? And, you know, she just looked at me and she said, my dogs need snow. And I was like, you know, Daddy's been doing this work for over 25 years, and you get the whole campaign down to 4 words. And, you know, and I realized that this was a special one. And, you know, when I I never got the memo that I would like being Daddy Dune, but she changed my life and changed the way that I do my work. And I just feel like I still do not like Good Fridays. Earthquake happened in 1964, the 1989 Exxon Valdez, and now climate change. You know, we're having to take these battles head on. And I just think that, you know, we need to figure out how to collaborate and create partnerships. And I want to believe that we have the collective knowledge and understanding of what reality and truth is, regardless of what they see on TV and hear in the news, that, you know, there's a reality that we all have, and that we're all in this together, and we're going to have to figure out how to survive. So I'm hoping that, you know, people are going to rise up and take on the powers that be and protect what we do have, and that's our precious blue Mother Earth.
Yes, and I like to say, you know, rather than speak truth to power, which is still kind of outsourced authority, Saturn, speak truth, be power, transform the powers of, well, the powers that be, of course, is nature. That the real ones there. So it's, you know, and then I know this is a futile linguistic quest, but you know, whatever we say, we get more. So with myself and others, you know, we have a default setting of struggle, which is understandable, and I back off if anybody loves it. But I like to say, well, what would it feel like if we replaced the word struggle with dance? I've been dancing this issue for years. Anyway, I'm just putting that out there because you're a feeling kind of guy. You know, if we change one word, what's the feeling? And Uranus, trickster genius, dancing with all of us, says, we are big beings dancing with you. We don't care what you do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice. Whatever word you choose to use, whatever, and whatever you choose to do from freedom, not fear, it'll fly. So, there, that's my little playful thing on our language play, in keeping with Lila June, right? I mean, she goes, and in keeping with Harriet Tubman. I ever since I was been reading of her in the last year, I'm just, you know, and I want to pass it on to you. It was said of Harriet Tubman as an animist, because everything was alive to her, and that's part of what made her work and the Underground Railroad work. And it was said of her that she approached each day with a luminous pragmatism. You know, and isn't that kind of a quality, a part of you that you can inhale, Dune? You know, Dune approaching each day with Ananda, with luminous pragmatism?
Ooh. Yes, I love that. And, you know, and at the same time, I think about how I was brought up. I was brought up on the ocean. You know, we started fishing when we're tall enough to reach the hydraulic handle and could run the power blocker that went on the boat. And I remember, you know, being out there, and the thing about being a fisherman, and even a fisherwoman, is that you have to be eternal optimist if you're going to make it. You always have to believe that the next set will be better, the next day will be better, the next week will be better, the next year will be better. Because you never want to tell your crew that the fish aren't coming or it's over, because then you're going to have mutiny. And so you always have to be positive. So in my entire life, I wake up every day thinking I can change the world. And all I have to do is show up and represent. And, you know, and so, you know, I was brought up by a family that my mother would always tell her seven little Indians, there's nothing stronger in this world than your belief in yourself and your dreams. And so I would live that. I would breathe that. And I would know that. And, you know, and so it's wonderful. Luminous pragmatism.
Yeah, luminous pragmatism. And let's, you know, in our approach, well, waning, we still have plenty of time, but in our waning time, the incredibly great things you've been doing, and wanting to, again, this reciprocal blessing on this show, Visionary Activist Show, hello, everybody, you know, that you give so much, and then what would you want back? You've been working on some projects for a million years, but in the notes you sent me, so you secured another 1 acre parcel of land on the Eyak Lake. I remember that. And a carving shack to carve a healing Eyak totem pole. That's really wonderful. And then received a 1 acre parcel of ancestral land. And then in January 2025, just now, the best thing that happened in January, the Eyaks received 1,500 acres of ancestral land from the Berg Lake area adjacent to the Bering River coalfield on the eastern Copper River Delta. Yay, right?
Yeah, you know, I've always felt, you know, that in about 2019, when I got into food sovereignty and food security work, I decided that land back plus ocean back equals people back. This is how we push the envelope and get people to think differently and do things for different reasons. And so I've always believed that, you know, getting our land back will help us get grounded and realize that we have to forge forward in this time of climate change, ocean acidification, ocean rising, ocean warming, on our own, because no one's coming for us. You know, we're going to have to figure out solutions and things that work for us. And that's why I decided to figure out how to grow things from the sea. But so, you know, getting these other land back deals in place that I've worked on for, you know, decades in my life, you know, one of them we're still trying to preserve the 11,920 yes. acres of the Bering River coalfield on the Eastern Delta. And I haven't given up on that. That's a 130-year campaign that started from the territory days. And so, you know, I feel like, you know, I just have to outlive a lot of these folks who, you know, continue to try and develop our lands without reason. And I feel like, you know, there's things that we have to, you know, figure out how we're going to, you know, create economies differently that are, you know, based on being restorative and regenerative and resilient and renewable economies that make sense for living on this planet. You know, otherwise we're going to all cease to exist.
Yes. Well, when you're speaking from your charitable heart, you know, again, you're Leo planet, the word charisma comes from charis, from which we get charitable and Eucharist and Cordelia, dedicated heart. So true charisma is a charitable heart, you know, and I just want to put on the table, according to the, you know, when you speak from your charitable heart on behalf of the land and kinship, you are irresistible. Irresistible. That is a blessing all of us teammate listeners are putting upon you. When you speak from your heart about the land, people go, oh, because I know we've done several shows with you over the years, not in a while, right, on the 11,920 acres of the Bering River coalfield that you are attempting to negotiate with the South Korean Alaska Development Company, you know, the 130-year campaign to keep the coal in the ground, right? And I remember all of your talking to the patriarch, right, and about power of story and kinship and good feeling and many kinds of wealth other than stockholder money, right? So what blessing would you like to see? Let's make it a kind of what creatures would be happiest with this? Let's see them. You know, the creatures that would be happiest for the 11,920 acres having coal kept in the ground.
Yeah.
Who would be happiest? Who would be happiest?
There. I think number one it would be the salmon They've found that if you develop the spawning habitat of salmon, they could disappear right away and be gone until you restore that habitat again. And so this coal field, if ever developed, would require a 30-mile road across wild salmon habitat from Cordova all the way 55 miles east of here. And so all of the wildlife, the sea life, the salmon, they would all be happy and dancing on the Delta.
Yes.
And there'd be no more drama on the Delta.
That's right. Right. Because you also, in our historic journey down the Copper River, we stopped at a place where the mama bears were teaching their babies to fish salmon. Oh, that's really great. And that, too, had been threatened to be turned into some touristy thing. But didn't you prevent that? Yes?
I did. You know, that was a battle and a half, that one. And, you know, it was one of those battles where they wanted to turn Abercrombie Rapids into the McNeil River of the Copper. And I just felt that, you know, some places are sacred and should be left alone. Because the wonderful thing about Abercrombie Rapids is the male bears usually leave the female bears and their little ones alone at this area because they can get their salmon anywhere. They don't have to be at Abercrombie. But the thing about Abercrombie, it's so deep and the water narrows down, the river narrows down, so it runs hard through there. And sometimes there could be 25-foot rapids at Abercrombie. And every time we've stopped there, you usually see mamas and babies and them teaching them how to fish. And so I just felt it was one of those sacred sites that shouldn't have jet boats and cabins and people, you know, going up there. And so I was able to protect that land for at least 100 years. And it was quite dramatic, but you know, it was just one of those land back deals that, you know, I felt had to happen, and I stuck with it and made that happen. And so there's some other properties that we're looking at right now. I've actually got 9 different land back deals going. We have numerous ocean back projects with our kelp and ocean farming. We're working with all these different villages in Southeast. We're going to get a number of kelp and mariculture farms in the water in the next year or so. So we formed a native sea trust to actually receive funding to buy permits to get them in the hands of indigenous peoples. We're working on forming an indigenous mariculture plan, which is a strategy to figure out, you know, how to get different regions and different areas on the planet involved in kelp and mariculture. And we just received a verbal commitment to create a native kelp cooperative, which will help offset the high costs of doing a new ocean business, figuring out how to get kelp test lines in the water and do landscape analysis and actually pay for your arrays and your anchors, lines, and buoys to be able to get this industry off the ground, as well as figure out how to get decent boats and markets for our kelp. And then, you know, we want to form a native kelp alliance, which would be a 501c4 to take on policies and laws and regulations and write legislation for this new ocean industry. And then last but not least, we want to start a kelp highway network, because in doing the readings and studies of early kelp farming and actually even kelp harvesting, I read this story where Native peoples used to navigate the ocean by kelp highways. And, you know, and that just intrigued me, and I could see it, you know, because I've chased salmon along kelp highways. And so I feel that that network will help us, you know, duplicate successes rather than the many mistakes. But then mistakes are also experience as well. So we learn, hopefully.
Yeah, no, that's right. Kelp was a nuisance to you, and now it's an ally. There's a principle in there. There's a principle in there. Just the angle of relating, that's super great. The Native Kelp Alliance, yes. Right, these are the things we want to while you're doing it, bubble up into actuality, you know, to replace, you know, what's your political party? The Native Kelp Alliance. Oh, that's great. Yeah, so that's something that we can be proud to say, you know. I voted a straight Native Kelp Alliance ticket, right? So, yeah, and then, you know, you're doing all this, and then there's the interested tribes in kelp and mariculture, ocean farming. It goes on and on. Juneau, Douglas Tribe, Kodiak Tribe, Louisiana Tribes, Hawaii Tribes, New Zealand Tribes. Yeah, so many great beings. Films and creative projects, you go on. PBS's Hope in the Water, Mariculture short film about your ocean farming work, and a Fed by Blue book coming out. What is that? A Fed by Blue book coming out sometime this year? What's that?
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of different recipes, and they honored me in the book. They're going to put a picture as well as a quote in there. But a dear friend of mine, Barton Seaver, is working with the Fed by Blue folks who actually did the Hope in the Water film about our mariculture work. And so I'm really excited. It's going to be like a 400-page book that, you know, people are going to want to get for all the different recipes. It's going to be a lot of wonderful stuff.
I must make kelp cakes. I when I heard about them long ago, I was like, yes. And now it's like, oh, every cell in my body wants a kelp cake. But anyway, yeah. Will it teach us to do that?
Unfortunately, I don't think we put that recipe in the book.
All right, we'll have to find it somehow.
I can certainly share that with you because
okay,
we share this in different presentations that we do. And, you know, it's just amazing.
We're on our way out. We're on our way out. I hear the cue music. All right, Dune, this is to be continued conversing in perpetuity. Thank you so much,
right.
Dune Leichert, and all the work you do, and all blessings on all your projects. May they be miraculously wonderful, especially on this Easter. Thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey, the Visionary Activist Show, Coyote Network News, Visionary Activist Show on Patreon, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you, team. Woof. Swoosh.